You ever find yourself asking, why me? Maybe it was the chronic pain flaring up again, or one of those nights where you just couldn't shake the memories. Maybe it was waking up feeling like you're carrying more than just the weight of the day. Now picture this, you're on top of the world. You're serving your country, you're dreaming about becoming a pilot, running your own business. Then one split second, everything changes. A motorcycle crash, a medically induced coma, total blindness. Total blindness. And somehow, you still come out of it grateful. Kiwan Amy has taken adversity and built a life of meaning. In this episode, you'll hear how he turned tragedy that I just described into motivation, and how he redefined his identity after losing his sight, and why he believes the phrase, I define who I am, is more than just a quote, it's a way of life to him. This is real, it's raw, and it's exactly the kind of conversation that reminds us that we're not alone in whatever fight that we're struggling through. Before we dive into this episode, though, make sure you're subscribed to the email newsletter at driveonpodcast.com/subscribe. You'll get my five favorite episodes sent straight to your inbox. No fluff, just the best insights to help you drive on. I also want to take a moment to raise awareness for something deeply important to our community, the Global War on Terrorism Memorial Foundation. This organization is working to build a permanent national memorial in Washington, D.C. to honor the service members, families, and civilians impacted by the Global War on Terrorism. If you want to learn more or find out how you can support the mission, visit GWATMemorialFoundation.org. Now let's get into today's episode. Kiwan, welcome to the show. I'm really glad to have you here, and I've been really looking forward to our conversation for a little while now, but welcome to the show. Glad to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me, Scott. I really appreciate it, man.
Yeah, you bet. Maybe just to start off, can you tell us a little bit about your time in the Air Force, some of the experiences that you had that kind of maybe more memorable, maybe the things that transformed you into the type of leader that you are today?
Yes, I can easily do that. Well, the first one is me getting in the Air Force, man. Boot camp is automatically going to change your mind for the good or the bad. That's right. You're either going to learn that they're trying to get you to adapt to what the military life is, or you're going to try to fight against it, and you're not going to win. I promise that battle's going to be hard, buddy. It's an uphill one for you.
That's right.
And so that's the first one, you know, is initially going in. When you initially go in, it's all about now can we shift your mindset from being this young funky kid that think is smelling himself or herself to now we need to make you an adult. Mm. We need to make you somebody who cares about life, because that's what you're going into. You need to care about not only your life, but everybody who's beside or behind you.
That's right.
You know, and we have a saying in the military, I got your six. Mm-hmm. What that means is I've got your back. Yeah. Whatever you need me to do, whatever cover fire you need, whatever lookout you need, support, whatever, I've got your six.
Yep.
And so that's not to be taken lightly. Yeah. But if you're acting like it is in basic training or in your job, things can go wrong.
Yeah.
And so that's where it all kicked off, man. When I tell you they built a new person and the effect of, you know, me being more aware, that's one thing they would not stop saying. Situational awareness. I got tired of hearing that. But if you think about it, what is situational awareness? Well, what is this situation you're in? What do you have to be aware of? So they make you focus on the situation or the task at hand. And what are the awareness that comes with it? That way you'll never be out of the loop.
Right.
You know what I mean? It was so, at that time, you didn't understand it. Mm-hmm. But now I'm like, oh, well, I'm always situationally aware.
Yeah. It goes beyond a military mindset too, because yes, sure, situational awareness. If you're in a combat zone, for example, you got to be aware of your surroundings, look for things that are maybe out of place, like some, disturbed, you know, earth on the side of the road or something like that, mm-hmm. where maybe a bomb was buried, or, you know, maybe something off in the distance where maybe a sniper could be, or, you know, any of those types of things. You got to be constantly looking for those types of things. And those things are, by their very nature, they're trying to hide so that you don't see them. So you really have to be aware, and you have to be looking for everything, using all your senses, your hearing, your the smell, you know, the sight, all these things that you got to use to look for any abnormalities that might exist, so that you don't step on that landmine mm-hmm. that might be there, or, you know, get shot by a sniper from the window on the third floor of that building over there or whatever. Mm-hmm. You really got to pay attention. But you can also take that out into just your everyday life, being aware of the situation. Driving a car is something that, you know, as you're driving, yeah, got to be aware. Is there's someone coming up behind you that's speeding, going 100 miles an hour, and they're about to crash into you, or, you know, is there an accident up ahead or something that you have to, you know, just be careful about, because there's going to be people getting out of the cars and, you know, doing all that. You got to be careful, you know?
Yeah.
All these things,
and Scott,
right?
Scott, I'm glad you brought up a car situation, because I actually was just talking about this recently. Back, I don't remember what year it was, maybe 2015, 2016, but it was July 4th weekend. I do know that, because we were leaving the beach, and I was in Jacksonville, Florida, leaving Jack's Beach, and they have these bridges, like little, mm-hmm. just little small ones, not the big ones that they have there, but these little small ones that are going over a little thing of water. And so you're using this bridge to go into Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. So from Jack's Beach, it connects you to Jacksonville. And so at the top of this hill, the bridge, though, you can't, if you're coming from behind, you can't see what's on the other side.
Right.
Until you get to the crest. And so we're sitting, and now remember, July 4th weekend, everybody loves to go to the beach. You know why? Because they want to watch fireworks. They want to, you know, enjoy their time, drink, whatever.
Yep.
And so there's a lot of people leaving the beach because the fireworks show just ended. And I am in a car with my girlfriend at the time that is sitting on the crest, on that peak of the bridge. Mm-hmm. And it's traffic backed all the way up from the stoplight to where I am. We are sitting still. And there's one car behind me, right? He's sitting still too. Well, in my situational awareness, luckily I didn't have the music up loud. And I'm listening. Nobody's moving in front of me. But I definitely hear somebody moving behind me.
Mm.
And all I hear is, and I'm like, okay, somebody's going a little bit too fast for us to be sitting still. And I look up in the rearview mirror, and I'm like, oh, shoot. And then you hear, because now he sees us sitting still. A bunch of brake lights. You see a sea of brake lights.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, oh, shoot. Release the brake, and I'm in the far left lane. I think it's like a 3 or 4 lane bridge on each side.
Okay.
But I'm in the far left lane. And as soon as I see him braking, I release the brake and turn the wheel to the left. Because now I'm trying to get out of the way of the car that's in front of me and mm-hmm. the one that he's about to run into.
Yeah.
Because I'm in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
And if he smacks that car hard enough, it can run into me.
Sure.
Well, now we're in a chain reaction. I don't want to be a part of it because I don't like insurance claims. And so I release the brake, and my girlfriend's like, wait, where are you going? Where are you going? And she's panicking, thinking I'm trying to, you know, drive.
Yeah,
right. I'm like, no, look behind you. And she turns around and she's like, oh! And he had hit the car already. She hadn't even heard it. She didn't even hear.
Wow.
She didn't hear the screeching.
Yeah.
She was in her phone. She didn't hear the screeching. She didn't hear the impact. Like you hear everything. I can hear all of that. She heard none of it.
Right.
And so I'm like, look behind you. She finally looks back and she sees the puff of smoke from the radiator, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Impacting that the rear end of that car. And she was like, oh, my God. And I was like, yeah, that's what I heard. I don't know what you're doing.
Right. You know? Well, you know, and being the guy behind the wheel, you got to be paying attention to all that
yes.
stuff. And so, Yeah, I think that's one of those qualities that gets instilled in you early on, like you said, in basic training in the military. And I think that's one of those good qualities that we carry with us. You know, there's some good and bad things that come from that, but you don't want to be so hyper vigilant that you're constantly like on alert and on edge, and you can't really handle it because it's just too overwhelming.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Tone it down just a notch, but still keep it, right? Keep that situational awareness so that you know what's going on around you and you can react to things that could potentially be, you know, cause an injury or, you know, be life-threatening or things like that, like a car accident like that, right? Now, speaking of accidents, I do want to kind of move on a little bit into your story and talk about a motorcycle accident that you had, kind of life-altering event that took place for you. Tell us a little bit about that and kind of how you found the strength to turn that event into something positive, like the motivational work that you do.
Yeah, so going into the accident, you know, that was May 5th, 2017. What some might call Cinco de Mayo, I call my new life's journey, you know, because that's when everything would change for me. It would. And I was in the reserves at this time. I had did 4 years active, Palace Chased, which basically mean I did not completely finish my active duty commitment. But what they do is they added on the back half of your reserve commitment.
Okay.
So I served the rest of my active duty career or years. Mm-hmm. I had six total. I only served four of them. So I finished my two in the reserves, but then they doubled it to basically have a commitment of 4 years.
Got it. Okay.
In the reserves. So did that. And I would have to also now, because I wanted to become a pilot, so I would also be going to school full time to get my degree.
Sure.
And I was studying computer information systems with a specialization in systems analysis and integration. And that's a long way of saying, hey, here's how you learn how to code.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
And so you're learning coding and a little bit of business as well, because I'm the middleman to the computer engineer and or software engineer and the business operator.
Got it.
The business owner. And what I'm doing is telling this guy, the computer or software engineer, hey, this is the kind of software that this business needs, because this person doesn't know how to talk to this person and this person doesn't know how to talk to this person, but I understand both languages.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I get you.
I'm a linguist.
Yeah, that's basically what it is, right?
You're
trying to translate business speak into code geek speak, and then you go to
vice versa,
right?
So, you know, I did that, and that also, me going to school, brought about my business, because this AME Motivation is not my first business. It's actually my second. Okay. My first was Kiwi Enterprise, where I would do website design and management, social media marketing, as well as photography.
Okay.
And I did that for small businesses and those alike. So, and the reason I say those alike is because that day, May 5th, I would actually be working for Kiwi Enterprise in the morning. And then later on, I had to go, you know, work for the military that night.
Sure.
And so I grabbed my motorcycle that day because it was a beautiful spring day in North Carolina. And here in North Carolina, you can get, well, for me, because I'm not allergic like to pollen.
Oh,
some people can't stand pollen.
Yeah, sure.
I don't care because I'm not allergic. So I was on my bike loving life. And from where my apartment is to where I had to go take pictures, which was my church, I was updating their website because the pictures that they had online were out of date.
Okay.
And from my apartment to the church was about a 10-minute ride. And when I got done taking the pictures, I was like, this is too short of a ride, especially for a nice day like this. Yeah, I think I should ride a little bit more. Red flag.
Yeah, sure.
And so I take off to the lake here in North Carolina called Jordan Lake.
Okay.
And I made it there, no problem. That's usually the same spot that I always go to just kind of relax, zone out, meditate, whatever you want to call it. And I did this all the time. This wasn't my first time doing it. I do it all the time. And so, anywho, by the way, if you see the cover of my book, Don't Focus on Why Me from Motorcycle Accident and Miracle, That is the backdrop, the actual spot that I used to go sit. That's why that image is there. That was the lake that I used to go sit at. And that was the last place I would visit before this accident that I'm getting ready to tell you about. And that motorcycle is my actual bike. That's Nina. I did name my bike. That's Nina. And so, you know, I get ready to head back to the house because I had to get my stuff to go to work. And man, as I'm riding down the road, Highway 751, this is only a 2-lane highway because it's a back highway in the woods here in North Carolina. And we have plenty of them. And North Carolina has these really tall trees when you're in the woods. They're about 25, 30 feet tall.
Okay.
They're really tall, nice and green, you know, whatever. But they're along both sides of the road. Unless it's at an intersection, somebody's driveway, the gas station, or this one produce farm that I saw out there. Yeah, it was a produce farm.
Okay.
And so that's where the trees would be cut back at, you know, so you can see what's coming. Because the speed limit is like 55 miles an hour. So you don't want to just pull out in front of somebody at 55,
yeah, that's right,
you know.
Yeah.
And I told you it's a produce farm. So there's trucks coming down here too, semi-trucks. Yeah. Just imagine pulling out one in front of one of those and they're doing 55, 60 miles an hour. You're going with it.
Yeah, that's right. It's not even going to know you're there. It's just going to keep going.
It knew, especially now if it's fully loaded. You're going with it, buddy.
Yeah, right.
And so as I'm riding down the highway, I have Bluetooth capability in my headset or a helmet, shall I say. And I'm pretty sure I was listening to the album 24 Karat Magic by Bruno Mars.
Okay.
I'm almost certain because that was around that same time. It was really popular and I love music. And that was a great album.
Okay.
You know, and so I'm jamming out, riding to the music on my bike. And man, I tell you, this was such an amazing day. Until it wasn't.
Mm.
And that's where this silver Honda Accord would pull out in front of me. And pretty much that's all she wrote. But I mean, I'll give you the options that I think I had. I had the option to go right and go into the trees.
Mm.
I had the option of going left and going to oncoming traffic. Or I could do what happened, and that's freezing up and hitting him.
Yeah.
Because, yes, I've taken all the motorcycle courses that they have. They offer, you know, none of those courses tell you, hey, on May 5th around 2 p.m., a car is going to pull out in front of you.
Right.
Otherwise, I would have known.
That's right.
And so the fact that, you know, he did that, I am now unaware. And so he pulls out in front of me and I hit him. The impact, of course, was crucial. So deadly, man. Literally crushed my face in, broke my spine, both of my legs, to include my femur, which is the largest bone in your body. You know, I lost my eyesight from it, from all the just injuries that were sustained to the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And gosh, I mean, what else? I broke my jaw.
Yeah.
You know, it's so much. I also lost the sense of smell. And that was due to the reconstructive surgery they had to do to my face. And that's because my head is, I now have metal plates in my head.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, two of them to be exact. And so now that, you know, I am life flighted to UNC Hospital in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, go Tar Heels, by the way, I'm a Tar Heel fan. So now that I've been life flighted and, you know, they're trying to figure out what they can do with me, if anything, I am now unconscious. I know nothing about nothing. The fact that I even know it was a silver Honda Accord, the fact that I even know where it was, any of that is because of a police report.
Oh, okay.
There were two witnesses, and the reason I say that was because it was two cars behind him who put on their police report that they saw me coming. So they don't know why he didn't.
Mm.
Easy case. Case closed. You're the guy.
Yeah.
Book him, Dano. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
So a month and a day later, man, June the 6th, is when I would come out of my medically induced coma. Yeah.
Is right. That's rough.
Dude, I lost a month of my life and I still don't know where it's at.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's somewhere in that hospital though.
That's right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So,
you know, and so, you know, you lose, well, two senses, really. You lose your eyesight, you lose your sense of smell. And I know I've heard from other people who have lost a sense that other senses get heightened when mm-hmm. when they lose a sense. Like, you know, if you lose your eyesight, maybe your hearing gets you know, more heightened or something. I can only imagine after losing two senses, like what that might have done, if that's even true, what that might mm-hmm. have done to you as far as the other senses go. Are they like mm-hmm. on super high alert or is it, you know, kind of basically status quo, just, you know, the normal, you know, level?
Well, no, it's definitely not the normal level. What it tends to do is make your brain rely on other things.
Yeah.
So I lost my eyesight. So now my brain is using my hearing to overcompensate for it.
Yeah.
Hey, dude, we lost something. Something's down. System's down. we gotta fire up the emergency system.
Sure.
You know, and that's kind of what it is. It reroutes everything.
Okay.
Reroute. Let's try to use something else. What can we use? What's left, guys? Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what it does. Your brain is very intelligent and capable of doing these things. Now it's just got to figure out what to do it with.
Right.
And so, okay, eyes gone. That's what somebody's troubleshooting. Ears?
Yeah, sure.
yeah. Okay, let's try that. Yeah, it's working. We're able to do it. You know, and when I tell you my sense of touch is crazy, dude, my nephew, he was messing with me yesterday. He kept touching me, and I had on a hoodie, and he kept touching me. I could feel it through the hoodie.
Yeah.
So good that it was almost like he was touching my skin.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, why does it feel like something's touching me? And then I heard it because he was doing it with a Chinese yo-yo.
Oh, okay.
And that's why I couldn't really feel, because that's paper.
Yep.
And so I was like, if you don't stop messing with me, because I was like, I thought I was tripping, man. I really thought something was going on.
Yeah, right.
I was like, oh, you like, oh. I was like, because I thought I was going crazy. I was like, why do I feel like something's touching me?
Yeah.
And then I heard it and I was like, boy. And so that's another one that tightened his feel.
Yeah.
I mean, I can tell you when it feels like it's, hey man, I think that's some rain, dude. It's getting cool.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That cool breeze is bringing about some rain, brother. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so you start paying attention to those other variables that are going on in the environment around you that...
Oh,
yeah. So it's interesting, you know, hearing mm-hmm. how that works with other people, you know, interesting to me at least. So that's why I wanted to kind of question that and just see what that was like for you. But so you've taken this incident. Obviously, you got out of the military, you know, after all that, right? I believe that's kind of the next step after all that, right?
Yeah. And, I mean, it took about 4 years, but yeah.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. That's the thing that like just drives me nuts sometimes with the military is like they drag things out sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes it may be good, you know, for some people, because maybe you weren't prepared for like, what am I going to do afterwards? And okay. So that gives you a little time to prepare. But on the other hand, like, it's like sometimes it's like you just want to get it over with and get out and move on, right?
One part of that is I wouldn't mind, you know, getting out sooner, only if because that's what got me my money.
Yeah,
I wasn't getting paid. While I was still in for 4 years, uh-huh. I wasn't receiving a dime from the military.
Oh, wow.
So now I'm relying on a maybe $1,300 Social Security check.
Oh, wow.
Maybe. I don't know if anybody's seen prices out here today, but $1,300 and I'm living somewhere, got a car, insurance. I got to feed myself.
Yeah.
Luckily, my apartment lease was coming due, so I didn't have to stay there but another like 2 months or something.
Okay.
And so I left there as soon as I could. And I went and lived with my grandmother, you know what I mean? And
sure.
thankfully she was okay with like, oh, well, I mean, I can buy food and stuff, you know, because I literally still had a car.
Yeah.
A whole one with a whole payment.
Yeah, that's the thing that comes with those whole cars, the whole payment.
You know what I mean? It does not pay for itself.
Yeah, right.
And I mean, I don't have it anymore now, but you know, I had to find out how I'm going to pay. Okay, yes, I can afford it. But what do I have left?
Yeah.
After I pay this? You know, so that was one of the big things there, man.
Well, one of the things that I noticed with you just through our conversation before we started recording and even now throughout the conversation is that this is not something that you have let drag you down. You have an upbeat attitude. You're friendly. You're very personable. You have a great attitude about yourself, and yeah, all these things have happened to you. You know, losing as much as you have, having financial issues, having, you know, medical issues, having all these different issues doesn't seem to be dragging you down. I mean, maybe, yeah, I'm sure you have your days, but you still have your wits about you. You're still friendly. You're funny. You're personable. Other people though, sometimes they let that negative experience, that traumatic experience define them. And that becomes everything about them. And it's just like a dark cloud that just lingers over them and doesn't go away. But it seems like that's not the case with you. And you've taken this, you've turned it into, you know, you have the business Amy Motivation as well, you know, and you're using that to impact others, to help other people overcome, you know, the issues that they're going through. Tell us how all that came about and what it is that you do to help those other folks.
Yeah, you said a word that made me smile. And that's why I was starting to grin like that. You said I didn't let it define me.
Yeah.
That's the hugest part right there. So one of my quotes that I hold on to, and I got this from a TV show. Some may know it, some may not. It's called The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, man. And that was a quote on there, man. And this from like the first season. Not the later season, the first season.
Okay.
And it says, my situation does not define who I am. I define who I am.
There you go. Yeah.
And so I didn't let the situation of the motorcycle accident, the way I was being treated, the way that my ex-girlfriend, you know, ghosted me completely. You know, I didn't let that stuff define me.
Right.
I took lessons from it and made myself better so that I could define who I am. And so when you hear me speak, I speak from experience.
Sure.
When you hear me mentor, I'm mentoring from experience. Mm-hmm. When you hear me coach, I'm coaching from experience. This is not just something that I'm, oh yeah, well, the book says in chapter 3, you should probably be, no, that ain't no book. The book is life right now.
Yeah,
that's what the book is. Right. The book is my life. And I'm going to speak to you from life experiences. Who better to teach you something than somebody who's been through it? I don't want you to just be telling me something that you heard.
Right.
Because that doesn't, to me, I've heard a lot of things too. It ain't doing nothing for me.
Sure.
You know? So I've heard about $1 billion. Still don't know what that feels like. I wish I did.
Yeah, right, you know? Right.
But you know, it's just that those types of mindsets and man, I love what I do.
That's
now,
awesome.
I mean, I thought I loved, you know, that in-flight refueling thing. I love the coolness of it. It's very cool. It's really, man. I mean, ain't nothing like that.
Right.
But I love what I do now because I'm impacting people.
Yeah, and when you have something like that where you're impacting people, and it's fulfilling to you, it's something that you enjoy, that you love to do, and you're actually helping other people, you probably don't feel like you ever have to say, I have to go to work today. It's more like, I get to go to work today.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that there's like a key difference there, because a lot of people, they go to their 9-to-5 job and they hate it, and they're punching the clock, and they, you know, they they're there because they have to be there because they need the paycheck to pay the bills for the stuff that they don't really want, but they have anyways. And they're spending all their time doing things that they hate just for the paycheck. But, and I'm not saying that there's anything necessarily wrong with having a job like that. You know, obviously that if you got to pay the bills, you got to pay the bills, but
yeah,
expand your way of thinking to something kind of like what you're saying here is like, man, I love what I do. This is just a great experience. I love being able to do this stuff. So, I feel like the more people understand that there is something out there for them that they can actually enjoy what they do too, the better off people will be. But the type of work that you do, you're out there helping people, and like you said, speaking from experience, in what ways are you able to kind of coach and guide people through the situations they're in?
Well, first and foremost, I just listen to what they say.
Okay.
If you're not listening, then you can't help anybody. And let me say that one more time. If you are not listening, you cannot help anybody. Mental therapy, physical therapy, any therapy, any coaching, I don't care if it's life, resilience, whatever coaching, even if it's sports coaching, if you're not listening to the young man or the young woman say what they have to say first, you can't help them.
Yeah.
So that's the first way I help, is by listening to you. Well, what are you dealing with? What is the part that you might, need to be coached in? Because there's different things that I might have to tell you. I can't tell you the same thing I just told Sally.
That's right.
Because Sally's situation ain't the same as yours.
Yeah.
But if I just go based off straight off of what she said or what I just told her, you're going to be screwed. How does that apply to me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? And so that's the first thing, is listening. Then I dissect. Okay, now let me, okay, I heard what you said about that. Well, what I would do is I would do this, implement. That's the next one. After I dissect it, I want you to now implement this. After you implement it, bring me the results.
Mm-hmm.
Because what the results tell me it's not to say, oh yeah, I did that. No, the results are to tell me if it worked.
Yeah.
Because if it didn't, let's go back to the drawing board. We're going to start back over. Let me listen to you again. I'm listening to your results now. We're going to dissect the results. We're going to implement what I gave you from the results. And then we're going to see the new results.
Mm-hmm.
Because it might not always work that first time.
Yeah, that's right.
You know what I mean? It's not just a one-stop shop or we nailed it on the first try. I mean, I hope we nail it on the first try.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I won't. I'm just saying that's life.
Right. Yeah. And you don't always get it right the first time. And I think that that applies to so many different situations in our lives. And I'm glad you brought that up, because mm-hmm. when someone maybe goes to a therapist, for counseling or whatever, and they go to that person and they're like, this person sucks. They're not doing it for me. And then they just give up on therapy altogether. Well, mm-hmm. I mean, maybe try somebody else, because maybe that one person didn't click with you. And, maybe there's somebody else out there. It doesn't necessarily mean that you got to give up on therapy altogether if that's something that you need. It's just, maybe that one person isn't the right person for you. Thomas Edison, I think it was, said when he was trying to invent the light bulb, he said, I didn't fail when I was trying all these different experiments and everything.
He just 10,000 ways that wouldn't work.
10,000 ways that didn't work, exactly.
Yep.
And so all of those were successes in his mind.
Yes.
It's like, I don't have to spend any more time on this way that doesn't work, but I can learn some lessons from it. Like, maybe exactly. I got a spark that lasted for a second or two, and okay, well, maybe what caused that spark? Maybe I'll use that a little bit more of, whatever to get that to work. And eventually he figured it out. Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Maybe it took many, many tries to get there, but eventually he figured it out. And I mean, if you're listening to this, just like take a peek around the room. You got light bulbs everywhere. It obviously mm-hmm. worked, right?
Yeah, obviously.
And so like that's I think a great example, but it doesn't need to take 10,000 tries to get to whatever that answer is. Like you said, hopefully you get it right on the first try, but if you don't, keep trying and try something different. Learn from that experience and mm-hmm. use that as just another data point to help you make a better, more informed decision going forward. And I think that's a smart way to look at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, for those folks who are maybe struggling, they're dealing with whatever life throws at them, something similar to your situation, maybe a unexpected medical issue or something like that, some life changes, but they're just struggling with that. Like, what for them, like, if you were to give them, like, what's their first step? What do you recommend to kind of get people back on track?
Well, I mean, the first thing, and that's kind of like what I had to do. I just had to assess the situation, man.
Yeah.
Like, what the heck is going on? And the biggest thing you could do is be real with yourself. What happened?
Yeah.
Whatever it was. I mean, even me, when I first had my accident, I thought it was my fault because I hadn't asked anybody yet.
Oh, okay.
So I'm assessing the situation in a manner of not having all the information.
Yeah.
Not having all the facts. So you can do it that way and stay that way where you don't have all the information and don't have all the facts, or you can start asking questions.
Yeah, that's right.
What happened? Was this my fault? Was this somebody else's fault? Did I move something? You know, did I put this table in the middle of the floor and forgot about it because the lights were off and now I'm stubbed my toe and I'm flipped over the table, over the couch and everything else and bust my head on the back?
Yeah, right, right.
You know what I mean? What happened?
Yeah.
You know, so assess the situation, man. And then it comes back to, okay, how do I fix this?
Yeah.
How do I gain from this? Because not only fixing, you can fix things, but sometimes life's not going to be the same.
Hmm.
For example, they fixed me, and I'm doing air quotes.
Yeah.
The reason I say fixed in air quotes is because they had to do all these different surgery and insert rods, screws, plates, everything. I got to learn how to use this stuff now.
Yeah.
I have never had metal in my body. You know,
right.
I've never been not able to see. I just turn on the light when I can't see. You know?
Right, right.
Now I can turn on any light you want me to. Ask me if I can see. Nope.
Exactly, yeah.
Still and, no. You know,
and,
so.
And so learning how to adapt to that.
Yeah, yeah.
New
it's
environment,
like, it's that learning
right?
curve.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so that's another huge thing is adapting because. With me, I did adaptive sports.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? Okay, I still play sports, but they're adapted to my ability, not disability,
sure.
My abilities. I can still walk. I can still jog. I can still move my arms. What can I do? Can I keep myself upright? Okay, he can. So he can do this part.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, it hurts his back when he stays up too long. Well, let him sit down for a little while. We adapt to what I'm able to do, not what I'm not able to do.
Right.
You know, and that's the biggest part is focus on what you can do, not what you can't.
Yeah, I agree. Because we still can do a lot of things, you know, despite all of your injuries, you know, can't see, can't smell, back problems, you know, all these other, you know, issues that you might have. It doesn't mean that you can't, like you said, like you can't get up and walk and jog and things. Sure, maybe there's some limitations. You're probably not going to want to go on a very windy trail. You know, that you'd probably prefer a more straight path, I would imagine.
Yeah.
You know, if this was me, that's probably what I would prefer is just a kind of straight direction. But even still, even if it was windy, like you still have ways of adapting to that. You still can be able to sense that, hey, that this road is turning a little bit, or, you know, not the road necessarily, but the path, right? It's turning.
Mm-hmm.
So you can still do those things. And I think, you know, again, going back to that mentality that a lot of people have where they allow that issue that they're having or the situation that they're in to define them. If that's where you're at in life and you're allowing that situation to define you, you're not even going to get up off the couch. It's like, well, geez, I can't see where I'm going. So I can't do that. And so you're just going to sit there. And you're not going to be successful, be motivated, be any of those things. You need to get up off the couch. You need to start moving and test your limits, just like anything else with life. Like whether you have lost your eyesight or not, anything that you're doing in life, you got to test those limits and see, can I push the boundaries a little bit? And that's how you grow. And that's how you get better. You know, you talk about like post-traumatic growth instead of post-traumatic stress, like grow from that instead
Nice. I like that.
Dealing with the stress of the situation, use that as fuel to, you know, throw on the fire and get yourself moving, you know, a little bit further. Right. I want to talk a little bit about your book before we wrap up here. You mentioned it earlier. Tell us a little bit more about what it is, what readers can expect from it, what you hope they can take away from it and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So Don't Focus on Why Me, From Motorcycle Accident to Miracle. First and foremost, you can find it on Amazon. That's the paperback version. Kindle, Audible, as well as Apple Books are the audio versions. So with this book, I'm telling you my side, my point of view of basically what happened, what transpired, what I was going through when I woke up, when I was in the hospital, when I was doing rehab, all that stuff. All the recovery, depression, suicidal thoughts, everything. I'm telling it all, okay? And it's from my point of view. And why I say it's from my point of view? Because I actually wrote the book. No ghostwriter, none of that. It was me. Yes, the blind man, Kiwan. I wrote that book. Sat behind a computer for hours a day, writing and writing and writing. And when I... At first, I didn't care to write this book because, I mean, English wasn't my best subject. Math was. So don't get me wrong. I'm very intelligent, but math was more of my forte.
Sure.
I just didn't think I would ever write a book, man. Mm-hmm. And so when it came to writing this book, it was because I was pushed. I was pushed not only by, you know, people in my circle, but, you know, God was like, hey, man, I think you should do this. I really do. I believe in you. This will matter to someone. And so, you know, with that being the fuel, I ignited the fire. And so now, with this book being written, I mean, I kind of, like I told you guys, I take you through a lot of things, the journey, basically. I'll give you a little bit of what I used to do, you know, at the time before the accident and all that stuff. I was 25 at the time, everything I was doing before that. And then I take you to the accident, you know, and walk you through that stuff and even the therapy side of it, man. And I don't mean physical, I mean mental.
Yeah.
Because that's huge. And I still go through mental therapy, by the way. I still go through those sessions.
Sure.
And so... Excuse me. The other thing about this book is that I write it differently. So military members, when we go to boot camp, and nowadays it's kind of different because they can use their phones a little bit more than I could. Every Sunday I got to use my phone.
Really? Okay.
That's it. Because they weren't using the pay phones anymore. The pay phones are basically out of service. They were still on the base, but they're out of service. But now there are no pay phones on the base. There's zero pay phones.
Wow.
So you have no choice but to use a cell phone.
Yeah, times are different.
Yes, absolutely.
I had no access to phones while I was in.
Right, exactly. And so you would write letters. Mm-hmm. You wrote letters to your family, your friends, your significant others. And boy, oh boy, did I love getting those letters from my girlfriend at the time. Man, I loved those letters because she would put on some lip gloss and kiss the letter. And she would spray her perfume on it. Oh, my dude. You listen, it was guys over there trying to smell my letter. Hey, man, if y'all don't move, I don't want y'all knowing nothing about my girl.
That's right.
But anyway, I did it like that. The book is it's kind of written in a letter. Like I wrote a letter to you, the reader. When I tell you it's so well done in that manner, too. Like I start off with Dear Reader and I finish it with Sincerely Kiwi.
Okay.
Like literally, I'm writing letters to you throughout the book. And that's how the chapters are written. And I wish I could take all the credit for it, but man, my editor, he was actually an army guy.
Okay.
He's retired now, but He's an army guy. I think he lives in Thailand or something now. So that was pretty cool that he was living in Thailand. I'm living in on the East Coast. We were literally 12 hours apart, right?
Yep.
So he would be waking up doing his edits. I would be going to sleep. And then when I wake up, I'm doing my edits. He's going to sleep. So we were literally trading off. We were knocking that book out like clockwork.
Man. Yeah, I was going to say that must have been a good flow.
It was perfect.
Yeah.
And so anyway, that book is just, it's like me pouring myself out onto pages. Now, the military, they don't train you to be vulnerable.
Right. The opposite.
I had to turn that switch back on somehow.
Sure.
Because that's what I was trying to do. I was trying to be as vulnerable as I could and as open as well, because I wanted you to understand the realness that I was going through. So, yeah, man, that's how the book came about. And what I want my readers to get out of this is that there is going to be some level of connection if you think of just what I went through. And when you read it, it's a lot different than what I'm speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I went through, how I was feeling at the time, I told y'all I got ghosted. I wrote about that. I told y'all about the mental therapy. I told y'all about the physical therapy. I told you about the depression, the suicide. I write all about this stuff. You want to read this.
Yeah.
I'm telling you. And get your tissue now. I'm telling you because I know I've heard the people say I had to carry me some tissue.
Yeah. Right.
So.
Well, and thank you for sharing that. And I don't want to obviously give too much away from the book. I want people to go out and get a copy of the book and read it.
Mm-hmm.
But I love that first part of the title, don't focus on why me, because that's a mindset that I think that we were talking about this whole time is that, why me, why did this happen to me? It's like, well, yep. You know what? It did. And who cares? It just happened. and so move on from that and use that experience. And I really do believe this. I think everybody's story is valuable and needs to be told because that may be the roadmap that somebody else uses to kind of kickstart their life, get that back on track. And so, someone like yourself writing that story, getting it out there, I think is super important. And so I do appreciate you first off for writing the story. It's not the easiest thing to do, to write a book, especially about something as traumatic as, what took place there. But also coming on here and sharing your story and everything, I really do, appreciate all that.
Yeah.
You did mention, the book is available on Amazon. If people want to connect with you, to get in touch about Amy Motivation and what you do there, where can they go to find out more information?
Absolutely. I can definitely tell them that. That's AmyMotivation.com. That's AMEY motivation.com. You can go on there. You can actually find my book on there. There's a link to it. You can go on there to book me for your conferences, your conventions, your events, your galas, whatever event you want me to speak at. I will come to you. Might be a fee, but I will come.
There you go.
And then if you want to follow me on social media, you can go to my Facebook, my Instagram, my LinkedIn, and all you have to do is search my first and last name, Kiwan Amy. First name is K-I-J-U-A-N, last name A-M-E-Y.
Excellent. Well, I will have links to all that in the show notes for the listeners to check out when they, hear this episode. I'm sure there's going to be people who want to, get in touch with you, get a copy of your book, all of those great things. So, thank you, Kiwan, for coming on the show again, sharing your journey through this whole ordeal and, everything that it is that you do, to help other folks. I really do appreciate all that you do and the work that you do. So thanks again for taking the time to come on.
Thank you so much, Scott. I appreciate it.